You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. At Working Nation, we are always looking for stories about in-demand jobs and industries. I came across a couple of references to the geospatial industry and how data analytics and satellite technology are playing a role in understanding the spread of COVID-19 and in other fields. I wanted to learn more and thought you would too. So joining me now to help us get a better understanding of the field is Carissa Christensen, the founder and CEO of Bryce Space and Technology, an aerospace and defense analysis and consulting firm. Carissa, thank you so much for getting on the phone with me today.
It's a pleasure. I look forward to our conversation.
I'm just going to talk to you as someone who doesn't really know what I'm talking about right now. Tell me what the geospatial industry is.
The geospatial industry uses data related to location, data related to timing, data related to imagery, puts all of those together to provide information that enables mapping and tracking of assets, efficient routing and management of logistics, a huge range of industrial and commercial applications from real estate to agriculture to transportation. The piece of that that I touch is the space piece. Much of that information, both the positioning and timing information, as well as the imagery, comes from satellites. And so my field is the space economy broadly, and the space economy provides an enormous amount of insight into where we are and what we're doing.
Give me an example of how the data analytics might be used in the space industry.
Speaking to geospatial data, as we just were, one example that every one of us uses every day is Google Maps, which blends imagery and positioning data. A much more esoteric version of that would be what we just saw happen, where we saw SpaceX conduct the launch and deliver astronauts to the International Space Station. And tracking and telemetry for that launch relies on satellite data, as well as AI and autonomous systems to conduct the mission. So those technologies, analytics technologies blended with automation technologies, are also very fundamental to space capabilities.
Do the people who work and do that analysis, do they come from a background of data analytics, like a degree in that or a credential in that, or do they have a more of an engineering background?
So that's a really great question. That is evolving, certainly. There are multiple threads in the past that you might have seen, people who have engineering backgrounds, people who have operations research backgrounds, or sort of straight up analytics or even statistics backgrounds, have kind of migrated into data analytics in the contemporary sense. More recently, you absolutely can get a degree in data analytics, and that's a very prized and coveted set of capabilities. Companies find it challenging to hire graduates with those skills. There's a lot of competition for those folks in the space industry and many other industries. I often say that space technology is not simply aerospace technology, but really it's analytic technology that's a fundamental part of where the space industry and space activity are going.
So you look at the space industry broadly and very specifically. Is it a growing field? Do you see a big demand in that industry? Is the industry growing?
The space industry is absolutely growing. What's interesting is it's growing in so many different ways. And what's also interesting is the space industry is many different industries put together. Satellite television and companies pursuing asteroid mining and imagery companies and exploration and military and defense companies. Those are all working on space projects. They're very, very different. So it's quite a diverse industry. It's growing on the commercial side. Over the last 5 years or so, there's been a massive increase of several billion dollars a year of venture and super angel investment in space. And the super angels are some very space motivated billionaires. On the civil side, in the US and other and elsewhere, there's a resurgence of interest in human space exploration. NASA, for example, is targeting a moon mission in 2024 and has seen significant budget growth. And on the military and intelligence side, over the last decade or so, the threat to space assets has been more and more of a concern and a consideration. And the US and its allies rely very heavily on space systems for their military security and for their military and intelligence systems to work. And so with the establishment of the Space Force and new space-related military organizations, there's growth there as well. So across the board, there's growth in the space industry.
I can't let it pass without asking, what is asteroid mining?
Asteroid mining is the idea, and it's a very compelling idea, but at the moment, not a very compelling business case. The idea that you can go acquire rare and exotic or high-value materials, like metals, from an asteroid, and that could be a viable business. And in fact, there have been a couple of startups seeking to do that. They've not been able to close the business case. And so that is, I think, a far future pathway as opposed to a business that we'll see in the near term.
Yeah, very science fiction at this point.
Yeah. And it's certainly interesting and intriguing. That said, there are many, many space industries and space activities that are making money today, that are real businesses today. And in fact, the space industry is much more commercial than most people, I think, realize, and has been for a good while.
You mentioned Google Maps. So we've actually been looking at that a little bit on what cities are doing now to try to plan out their, you know, their layouts as we start addressing a future after COVID-19.
So think about a smart city. And a smart city potentially uses space assets in many different ways, from imagery and geospatial data to support city planning, to ubiquitous communication via satellite, either as a backup to terrestrial communication or augmentation, or to provide remote users, people outside the city, access. Satellite broadband is widely available where fiber may not be. Through to using advanced materials that were developed in association with space missions and activities. So there's a surprising number of points of intersection between a smart city and space.
So on the idea of geospatial data analysis being used to look at COVID-19, how is that being used?
There are a number of use cases. One is to simply track indicators of level of activity, of to determine whether, for example, there might have been an outbreak in a location that's maybe not being reported on, but you can see traffic patterns, you can see behavior patterns change, to assess compliance. There's a really interesting use case associated with the unexpected experiment we're all engaging in. So for example, India has a significant pollution problems. We now have a footprint that we've never had before of what a dramatically reduced traffic environment does to that pollution environment, and the ability to judge more accurately how much of that pollution is from energy generation and how much is from automobile and other transportation. And so satellites collect that data and collect it consistently and around the world.
When you talk about national security in relation to what we were just discussing, does cybersecurity play a role in that? Are those two separate areas that your company deals with?
Cybersecurity is an increasingly important part of space activities. For a long time, space assets were not at the same kind of risk, at the same level of risk, did not get the same attention as terrestrial assets with regard to cyber risks and attacks. Space assets are now embedded in and integrated into our global communications architecture. And so for military purposes, as well as for commercial purposes, are at risk from cyber disruption, whether intentional or unintentional. It's very consequential. It has a big impact on so many aspects of life, not simply, you know, disrupting a military organization's ability to operate, but disrupting your ability to go to the bank because your bank relies on a GPS satellite for precision timing for ATM transactions.
When you're looking for the people in your organization, what kind of skills are you looking for? Not necessarily what kind of degrees or credentials, but what kind of skills are necessary?
In our DNA, we're an analysis organization. The term analysis today is so often equated with ideas of data analytics associated with massive data sets driven by the digitization of content and use patterns of the internet, combined with advanced techniques, machine learning and AI. And that is powerful and important type of analytic capability. I will say that in supporting government decision makers and industry leaders, we need to bring analytic capability that is even broader than that. Understanding how to structure a problem, understanding how to deal with ambiguous data, understanding how to put together a rigorous and objective and informed answer for a decision maker that copes with a huge amount of uncertainty, that helps drive to a decision without disguising the uncertainty. Those are really critical skills for what we do and how we succeed. And so I look for people with analytic training, and that may range from statistical analysis, operations research, more conventional analytics training, and also philosophy majors, economists, have training in logic and analysis that's really valuable in addressing those kinds of challenges.
That's interesting. I had never thought about the philosopher part of it, but when you're trying to think of it's a problem that you're trying to solve, and you're using your brain,
and you've built the discipline of structuring questions and answering in a logical manner and building an argument. It's actually hugely relevant to addressing those kinds of technical analytic questions.
Thank you, Carissa, for joining me. I found that very fascinating. And I think that's a field that a lot of people should think about as they look forward to the future.
We would love to have you in the space industry. No matter what you do, there's a spot for you.
My guest today has been Carissa Christensen, the founder and CEO of Bryce Space and Technology. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, editor-in-chief of Working Nation. My producer is Larry Buell. Our executive producers are Joan Lynch and Melissa Panzer. Thank you for joining us.